Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, you had the white police officer who shot the man on Sunday. Just horribly tragic. She resigned, as did the chief of police. I don't know if this helps much. I mean, still a 20-year-old man. Dante Wright is still dead. Does it matter if it was a mistake? Does it matter if she meant to tase him instead of shoot him? I don't know. And here to share some thoughts on where we go from here and why over air fresheners dangling from a mirror this stop even happens. I've asked Diallo Bricks to come talk with us. He's a senior director of field mobilization for the People for the American Way. Diallo, thanks for taking time for us.
How you doing, Rick?
I'm good. So is this anything? The female officer has resigned. The police chief's resigned. This to me is just a way to try and say, oh, hold on. Don't protest anymore. We've taken care of it. Does this matter to you?
No, the resignations don't matter to me. And it's not even a Band-Aid solution to the real problem that we continue to see in our communities with the attack on black folks or just driving while black. And it's a tragedy that continues to happen, and we need to see real change in this country to end this kind of police violence.
Am I getting this right? I mean, they were just air fresheners hanging from the mirror. This is a primary stop thing now? Is this what it was over?
Yeah, that's what it seems like it was over, and that's what's been reported. I think more details will come. But I think at the end of the day, it doesn't even matter what it was about. The fact that he was an unarmed individual, unarmed black man that was pulled over. There was multiple police officers at the scene, and this officer decided to shoot Dante Wright and kill Dante Wright. It's just another tragedy, and it's a lot of trauma that is happening to the black community, and we don't seem to see answers to these problems. It's continuous tragedy.
It just seems like, and maybe it's just that I'm hyper aware now, but it just seems like every day there's something going on. I mean, you know, there was also the soldier in Virginia who was pepper sprayed for I don't know what reason. And then I'm watching the cop hold the gun the way I'm going, what kind of training did you get to do that? I'm just looking at this stuff going, you know, has it always been this bad? Has this always been how egregious people have been treated?
Yeah, this is not something new. It's been a long time thing that's happened within our community and how police officers have interacted with black communities for a long time. And unfortunately, we don't see the accountability being placed at their feet for taking these types of actions. I don't think any other community would stand for, or this country wouldn't stand for, it happening to any other community in the way it happens to the black community. But I think everybody has to be concerned, because if police officers can act this way to black folks, they can act this way to anybody. But like I said, it's a continuous tragedy. It's something that's been swept under the rug for many, many years, I think, with body cameras and people's cell phone cameras and you know, technology. There's been, you know, in social media, this information has been shared more broadly. People have actually been able to kind of pull back the cloak and actually see what's happening on a regular basis. And so I think for a lot of folks, this is fresh and new. But as an African American, as a black man, I've known this type of thing to happen for a very long time. And whether it's a killing or it's just inappropriate interactions with the police interacting with the community has been a long-standing problem, and we need to do the hard work to create real change, save people's lives, to make public safety real for everyone.
I want to talk about that in a second, but you know, the excuse right now is that it was a mistake. This 26-year veteran police officer, she thought that she'd pulled her taser, and you know, and the audio is, you know, she expletive, I shot him. You know, she thought I don't know how you pull a taser and think it's a gun. I understand it does happen. Does that matter?
No, it doesn't matter because it's part of this is a pattern. This is not a one-off thing. And she's been on the force for a very long time. She's been somebody, I think, that's trained other officers. And you know, I think she's head of the police union there. I mean, so this is not somebody who just came on the job yesterday. This is somebody that's been on the job. And to take somebody's life and call it just an accident is, I think, really kind of like insulting the intelligence of our community.
So let me ask you, because the response I'm getting from a lot of listeners is, you know, had they just listened, you know, had the soldier just gotten out of the car as he was told, had this guy just, you know, put his hands behind his back and be arrested, he would still be alive today. The other guy wouldn't have gotten pepper sprayed. What response do we give to that?
The response is that the police officers are not jury and executioners. Their job is, if there's a violation, to deal with it appropriately. And this individual didn't have a weapon on them. This individual didn't pose a threat. But we continuously see police officers use excessive amounts of force to deal with Black people. And, you know, like I said, if this happened to any other community, I think there would be folks that would be willing to do the hard work to create change. But, I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, we've seen folks around the country that have conducted mass shootings, killed mass amounts of people, and have tremendous amounts of firearms on them being peacefully brought in by police officers.
And even taken to Burger King.
Taken to Burger King to get a burger. But you see a young man, 20-year-old, with multiple police officers around them being shot to death. That is just wrong. It is beyond kind of something that we can all just wrap our heads around, except for saying that there is a level of violence that is happening to the Black community that doesn't happen to other communities at the same percentage rate.
No, I agree with you, but you know, the response is always, had they just listened, you know, had you just done what you were told, we'd be fine. And you know, look, every time one of these comes up, there's always something, and we don't know what happens before the cameras start rolling in a lot of cases.
Right.
So you know, because I know people who look at the George Floyd video and they are disgusted. To me and to many other people I know, it's clear and cut that this was wrong. But they all go back, well, had he just gotten in the car, that's one of those things that I keep struggling with, going, yeah, had he gotten in the car, that wouldn't have happened. But he didn't just get in the car, and this is still not how you treat somebody.
Exactly. There's no excuse for it. I mean, if you look at the George Floyd situation, you look at this particular situation, as more details continue to come out, is it the responsibility of the police to kill somebody if they just basically don't obey a command or don't do things exactly the way they want them to do? You know, we always talk about de-escalation, and in a lot of these situations and circumstances, you see the police officers actually escalate the level of violence that's needed in that particular situation or the tension in that particular situation. You watch a lot of these officers not, you know, tone down the situation, make the situation easier, take some time, work these situations out in a way that has a peaceful ending. And like I said, you know, as a Black man, you know, it's hard to not think that when officers approach us, they look at us differently.
You know, I grew up in a predominantly Black housing project on the west side of Cleveland. And this is going back into the late 70s, early 80s. The police were very rough with people. They weren't shooting people, so to speak, but they would knock people around. And look, I've been knocked around by cops in the past. It's gone to another level. For me, it comes back to the training. And I remember, you know, look, I'd been arrested. And I remember, put your hands on the car, and they'd take your hand, put it behind your back, and they handcuffed you, and they'd take you off. I can't remember the last time I've seen somebody handcuffed while standing up. Every time I see something, they've been tackled, thrown to the ground, manhandled, people holding their arms and their legs and you know, basically pushing their face into the ground. And it comes back to the training.
Yeah, it comes back to the training, but also there's this thing about accountability. It's funny because certain folks want accountability for some, but not accountability for others. And, you know, if you don't hold folks accountable for these bad behaviors, if you, you know, have things like qualified immunity and you have these police unions that protect these officers in ways that, you know, that a normal person under the similar types of circumstances would not have that same level of protection, then, you know, you see these situations escalate beyond where they need to be. You know, I think officers would think twice. I think police officers in general would think twice if there was a level of accountability for their actions. But if you feel like you're justified to act in this way and that there's nobody that's going to hold you accountable, or the people that are there to hold you accountable are folks just like you, then, you know, you're more likely, in my opinion, to act out in that way. And I think the accountability has to go along with training. Because we've talked about training for a long time. And I think, you know, some departments have, you know, enforced more training. But the thing is, you have to be a willing participant in that training. You have to want that training. You have to take that training and actually use it when you move to the street. I actually did a conversation with some police officers, and they said, you know, it's funny because you talk about training, you go through the academy, and when you get out in the street and you first, as a rookie police officer, get in a police car with a veteran police officer, the veteran police officer tells you, forget about the training that you had at the police academy. The training starts now in the street. And so when you have that kind of mentality, when you have that kind of code that's happening behind the scenes with officers, then, you know, you can have training, but if it doesn't translate to action, then there's a problem. And I think accountability is a part of that action that needs to be put in place.
What do you say to the people who go, because it sounds like you're going to the place where a lot of friends have said that it's systematic. It's not just a few bad apples. But what do you make of that argument that, you know, hey, these are just a few bad apples on their worst day, you know, They didn't mean to escalate these things. You know, bad situations happen. What's the response there?
I mean, bad apples spoil the barrel. You know what I'm saying? If you get a bushel of apples and you have some bad apples in that barrel eventually becomes a tainted barrel. Many more apples become spoiled. And I think that we cannot sit and just have an excuse of a couple of bad apples and not look at the system that reinforces the existence of those bad apples. I think a lot of hard work needs to be done in the communities all over this country to really reimagine how we do public safety. Who needs to respond to various incidents? Sometimes you might not need folks with guns to respond to certain situations. If this was a minor traffic stop, you know, did it need to escalate to this level? Most people are thinking if it's true that he was pulled over because of air fresheners hanging from his rearview mirror, most people wonder why a police officer would even pull them over in the first place for that.
No, that was my thing. I mean, there are too many things that they use for primary enforcement. Like back when they first started mandating seatbelts, when the laws start coming out, it was a secondary enforcement. If you got pulled over for something and you didn't have your seatbelt on, they'd hit you. And then it was, now it's going to be a primary enforcement thing, which just meant it was another reason for you to be pulled over and have your day interrupted. And those interactions never go well. They're heated from the beginning. And then you have a hothead cop come up to the window and start giving you guff. It can easily escalate into problems. And look, I have a black friend who says, now imagine you get pulled over every week. You know, it's one thing to go through this once a year, once every couple of years. Imagine every week. Imagine every other day. Then it becomes the situations. And I think a lot of people don't realize that that's what happens.
Right. And it creates anxiety. It turns frustration. It creates fear. And you wonder why folks react the way they react during a police stop with that level of interaction. you're going to have some anxiety. You're going to have some fight or flight reactions in those situations because, you know, you continuously hear stories, you see it, you experience it. And so you're not going to be comfortable interacting with police officers if you've been treated this way in the past.
Now, you know, you said fight or flight. A lot of people are going to say, you know, the street corner, and this is what I've told my kids, because there's a lot of talk about parents having conversations on how to deal with the police with their children. And maybe it's because I grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood that I had the conversation with my kids, who certainly are not going to have the interactions that maybe your kids are going to have. But I said, look, you know, on the street with a cop is not the place to argue. It's not the place to fight. Whatever he says, even if it's wrong, you do it. The place to fight, the place to argue is in court. Don't get yourself beat up. Don't get yourself shot. They're the boss out there. Give them that. Give them their power trip. But in the courtroom, that's where you go to seek your justice, because you're going to lose every single time on the street because these things happen. You know, I have a lot of people who have that same kind of mentality. So when you're talking about fight or flight, isn't this the kind, I guess, what should police do if, like, this kid just decided he was going to take off? What should have happened?
Well, there's a lot of tactics that we've seen all over the world where police interact with somebody, particularly somebody who does not have a weapon, does not pose a threat to their lives, is take a much more de-escalated approach to dealing with the individual. I think when you lower the tension, the interaction can go very, very different. But when you interact with a high volume of force, you know, you escalate a situation, and the anxieties and fears that already exist in black people's minds around the interaction with police are exacerbated in that particular situation. And, you know, officers are trained to deal with this stuff. You've talked about it before. There's been training. And, you know, and particularly in this situation, when you look where there's an officer that is on trial in a neighboring jurisdiction, that the most public trial that there could be. It's been on CNN. It's been on the news. It's been on it's been on, you know, public television. Everybody is covering it. And then at the same time, you're still having this kind of forceful interaction with folks. I mean, it just shows that folks are not paying attention. And folks, quite honestly, have circled the wagons and said it's police against everybody else. And what I said, you know, it's a great example that you said, that you grew up in a predominantly African-American community. And, you know, while not being African-American, you still, you know, instill those values. These types of incidents spill over into other communities as well. When police take these liberties, it disproportionately happens to black folks, but it happens to other folks. It happens to marginalized communities. It can be poor white communities that have maybe similar experiences, not at the same rate, but it's something that if we want to really talk about public safety, we have to do policing differently than we're doing in this country, because as we see, it's not working the way it's happening right now.
Last question I've got for you, because, you know, there's this push, there was a push, I don't know if there still is, to defund the police, which I'm not in favor of. I support the police when they're not wrong. I think they need to be held accountable. But I think it's something that we still need. We just need to do it, I think, better. And look, I do want our policemen to be protected on the job. I want them to go home at the night at the end of their shift as safe as when they came in. So how do we get to a point to where this stuff stops and we move to a point where we do have community policing and relations are better, if that's possible?
I think it is possible, and I think there's places there in this country where there's folks trying to take some bold steps to really rethink how we do policing. It's not getting rid of police totally, but it's re-examining the approaches. I know in Ithaca, New York, a young mayor, Savante Myrick, and the city council in Ithaca, and then also the county council there as well, unanimously passed a reimagining public safety proposal that the mayor put forward that really limits the force of police officers and the number of folks that actually have guns and reinvest some of that money into places where they have mental health responders, they have social work responders, they have a civilian-led force to deal with some traffic enforcement that takes the interaction, the amount of interactions that the police have to have with the community. Because there's a lot of social work jobs that police are forced to do right now. And I think we need to take some of that away from the police department and put it into the appropriate places and let the police deal with the really, you know, high-end, you know, violent crimes that they might have to deal with in particular cities, and really have other folks focus in on responding to mental health challenges, responding to, you know, traffic violations in ways that don't bring an armed officer into that particular space. And then the limited contact will then also limit these incidents and save lives. And so I think, you know, like I said, in Ithaca, they're experimenting with that, and I think it'll be something that we can see happening in other cities around the country. And the mayor there, Savante Myers, has been bold with his proposal, and the city council has been bold by passing it and working through the details. And, you know, I think this is an experiment that's underway, and we need to be looking to models like that to create real change.
Yeah, I'm thinking about you because I've known a number of policemen over the years, and they always tell me that, you know, traffic stops are, you know, like domestic violence calls are extremely dangerous. Mm-hmm. And I'm imagining now an unarmed person pulling somebody over and the danger that that could pose to them. And I'm going, I don't know what the answers are, and I'm glad that there are people mm-hmm. experimenting, but it's most certainly something we have to do. But I know I wouldn't want to be the guy pulling someone over unarmed and in the middle of the night. Just my thought.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and like I said, there's probably different scenarios for different circumstances and situations. But like I said, if, you know, if you're limiting the amount of opportunities to actually have to pull somebody over in the middle of the night, I think it makes a difference as well. I think, you know, there's a double tension there too, because there's a black man driving in the middle of the night and having a police officer pull you over on a dark road is also equally as scary.
No, I understand 100%. I'm with you. Okay. And I wish we would do away with a lot of the nonsensical reasons that people get pulled over, like from having air fresheners dangling from the rear view mirror. But Dalio, I appreciate you taking time for us and sharing some thoughts. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Good stuff. I don't know the answers. I don't know anyone who does, but I know what we're doing now. Not really working. I'd love to hear your thoughts, though. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back after that. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.